Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Sleeper Wire Show. I am your host, Steven Specratelli, and today we have a very special guest. Mark Schofield is with us today, as well as Rob Rose and our buddy George. So first things first, I just want to kick it right over to our guest. Mark, how you doing, man? You know, what's good? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, where do we begin, my friends? And we were just sort of talking before the show, and these are certainly interesting times. That lovely expression, may you live in interesting times. Well, we certainly are. It's great to be with you guys tonight. I'm excited about the show, excited about what we're going to be talking about. For those that don't know, you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Write for a lot of places, let's just put it that way. Most recently, Touchdown Wire, part of the USA Today network, but places like Pro Football Weekly, a bunch of different SB Nation websites, Matt Waldman's rookie scouting portfolio. And I know we're going to get a little bit into my background, so I won't spoil any of that. But yes, I am the guy with the Toto references, the Scrubs gifts, and the Peaky Blinders gifts on Twitter. So that's what I'm known for.
I absolutely love that, man. And, you know, thank you for joining us today, Mark. It's great to have you on.
Oh, it's great to be here.
George, how you doing, buddy?
I am living life like nobody else. I'm just going to go
nobody
with that.
Like nobody else.
Nobody's living life like me.
Rob, how about yourself?
That is an accurate statement, George.
Thank you.
However,
thank you
glossed over a very important part here. Apparently, today I learned Steve does not know your last name.
He does not.
So, I do. It is Costanza. So we can move on with the show. I just want to point out that, you know, Delaware's doing good and we're not on fire. So step one, check. Continue on to step two, guys.
I like it. So as Mark said, you can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield, the Sleeper Wire Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Sleeper Wire Show. You can find Rob at Esor Boar, find George at BFTG Pod, and myself at SPAC21. So, Mark, as you talked about, man, you write for basically everybody, right? So, just a couple things about your background that kind of interested me a little bit. So, you were a 4-year letter winner as quarterback and situational wide receiver at, how do you pronounce the university? Is it Wesleyan?
Wesleyan University. That's right.
Wesleyan University. So you were like the Taysom Hill of the Cardinals, weren't you?
I wouldn't go that far. No? I mean, let's be honest here. I'm 5'0". At the time I was 100 and nothing. It was Division III football. It was the worst conference in all of Division III football because it was Division III non-scholarship. So as I like to brag to people, I was, for the most part of my playing days, the worst backup quarterback in the worst conference in all of college football, bar none. And I claim that with honor. And let's not forget, though, other notable alums from Wesleyan University's football program include Bill Belichick, Field Yates, Eric Mangini. And so I'm happy to be fourth on that little Mount Rushmore. I don't know if I actually am, but I'm going to claim that I am.
As far as the
situational wide receiver goes, that's a nice way of saying I was the receiver in our short yardage and goal line package, which means my job was to either block or fake a route. They were never going to throw to me. There wasn't a pass and play in that series that involved me. So, yeah, that's what it really means. I was basically a blocking dummy. I could have been like a trash can for all intents and purposes.
So I have to ask, I got to ask Mark, how often did they actually – have you go in to block?
A lot.
On the goal line. Really?
A lot, yeah. I mean, I came in, and basically the reason I won that job, and I say won again, I could probably use air quotes on that because nobody really wanted it. But in our inner squad scrimmage my sophomore year, they let me in for that formation on our option design, our speed option, where the person in my shoes, his only task was to crack block on the middle linebacker. And our middle linebacker, Ross Stafford, was a friend of mine. And I thought, this is my chance to get a shot at Ross that I'll never get to do again. And so I laid into him with everything that I had. And I got a good block on him. And so that was it. And I will tell a great quick story. My again, this was later my sophomore year. We were playing Colby at Colby, and my high school girlfriend and I had broken up like 2 weeks before that game, and she was going to Colby. And so I knew she was in the stands. Her parents were in the stands. Like, you know, we had been dating for pretty much all of high school. We had broken up as freshmen, got back together the summer because we all went home. So we got back together, and then we broke up again like weeks before this game. So they put me in. They put that series in on a goal line play. It was a one-score game. We needed a touchdown. They called the option. So I thought, look, this is my chance. I'm going to take all of the rage building up in my body over her dumping me and breaking up with me and just destroy this middle linebacker. And I was so excited for that play call. I mean, you could see probably smoke coming out of my eyes and my nostrils. Like, I was going to unload all of the pent up anger from the past 2 weeks on this poor guy. And our left tackle jumped offside. And so we pulled the short yardage team off the field because it was now a second and long situation. And yeah, I will not forget that moment because I was going to just destroy this kid. Now, of course, he was 6'4", 255, and I'm not and wasn't. So in all likelihood, I would have gotten steamrolled like my heart had been a couple of weeks before. But yeah, I mean, we called it a lot. There was a game in my junior year where we ran it pretty much primarily. It was one of those mud track sloppy games. But yeah, we actually used it a lot. But again, I never caught a pass.
So basically, since the left tackle saved your life,
yeah,
you didn't unleash all that rage on him on the sideline then, right?
No, absolutely not. I drowned myself into a bottle of tequila on the bus ride back to Connecticut. That's what I did.
Whatever gets the job done, man.
I think it did. I don't remember much of that night, but
well, see, then it was a success.
Yeah.
So your Twitter, it says law then, words about football now and Toto forever.
This is true.
Explain that. Like, do you still practice law today? And
absolutely
Toto
not.
Forever, man.
Absolutely not. I do not practice law. I walked away from the practice of law back in 2014 because I found out after 10 years of practicing law, the last place I was at, you know, an East Coast, you know, semi-national law firm, I was doing medical malpractice defense. And I found out that after 10 years of doing this, the thing I was actually good at was just talking about football because I was awful as a lawyer. And I could say that. I make no qualms about the fact that I wasn't a great lawyer. I've talked about my sort of journey on – you remember when Matt Harmon had his little backyard banter podcast? I was on with him talking about how, look, I was miserable. I was not in a good place mentally. My life was just passing me by. My wife, who's also a lawyer, we met in law school. Like, she's good at it. I'm not, thank God. Because it allowed me to like step away from law and throw myself into writing about football, you know, without a journalism background. And now I'm able to make it a full-time job, which is incredible. You know, what a time to be alive. But if I never set foot in a courtroom again, if I never pick up a, you know, legal pad again, other than to, you know, write notes about football players on it, I will be the happiest man alive. Like, I went to law school and it put me on a path to my wife and kids, basically, more than anything else. And, you know, there are times when I approach what I do sort of like I approach being a lawyer. Like, the pieces I write, I view them as arguments. I view the readers as, you know, jurors or judges. And I'm trying to convince them, you know, of what I'm seeing on the field. But yeah, if I never see the inside of a courtroom again, I will be the happiest man alive.
So I've got a quick question I want to ask you, and it's totally off subject, but I have a feeling.
Fire away.
I have a feeling that's going to happen a lot tonight. I have a 15, soon to be 16-year-old daughter. She actually wants to be a lawyer when she grows up. She's the program they have in school that she's going through right now is to set her up to go to eventually go to law school.
I get it.
We went through, we looked at, as a freshman, we're already looking at different law schools for her to go to. Right now, she wants to go to University of Florida for their law program.
Mm-hmm.
As a father, I have no advice to give her, like, what it's going to take to get there, because I didn't go to college. So what would you give any advice that I could probably give to her?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things I would mention that I wish I had been told, George, before going to law school. One, where you pick a law school, like, be prepared to live there. Like, be prepared to, like, live in that part of the country, because, like, Wesleyan, it's a New England school in Connecticut. I went to William & Mary in Virginia without any ties to the Virginia area. And they were like, well, I mean, you're staying in Virginia or that's it. Like, you know, when I would apply to jobs, and like I applied to, since my wife was from the Chicago area, I applied to a lot of jobs in the Chicago area, and they're like, you have absolutely no ties here. Like, you're from Boston, you're from the Boston area, you went to school in Connecticut, you went to law school in Virginia. Like, we're not going to, we don't trust that you're going to want to stay here. And so that's one thing to keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind, like, when you get to law school, unless things have changed since I left, you know, 16 years ago, that first semester of law school is pivotal. Like, all you've got to do is get good grades that first semester. It is going to put you on a path to where you want to be. You know, because I have friends that want the big law, you know, massive law firm route. Some of them are still there. And it's because they busted their butts the first semester of law school and got really good grades. What did I do? I drank because there was a really cute girl that I wanted to impress. That's what I did. Now, it worked out because she's currently upstairs, making sure our two kids are sleeping. So I got that part of it right. But I didn't
get that another tequila night.
I mean, I had switched to rum. Let's put it that way. Okay. Rum was pretty much my drink of choice in law school. William and Mary had this bar, and why am I blanking on the name of it right now? But they had mug night. And Sunday night, they had these like 32-ounce plastic mugs that you could get. I'm going to have to Google the name of this bar. It's like right across the street from the football field. So Sunday night was mug night. You get this 32-ounce mug, and you could fill it for $3 with whatever you wanted. Ooh. So I would put it on the bar and be like, rum and coke, please. And that was Sunday night. Like, so yeah, if that was Sunday night, you can imagine what law school was like, you know, Thursday and Friday nights for some of us. So, but yeah, first semester grades are critical. The other thing to sort of keep in mind is that if she wants to go into any sort of intellectual property, IP type, patent type law, you're going to need to have a science background in undergrad. Okay. Because that was what I wanted to do. I had an interest in computers. That's the field my father worked in. So I was like, I'm going to be a patent attorney. I'm going to be a, you know, IP attorney. But I was my major in Wesley was basically a quad major of history, government, philosophy, and economics. Like, that's the easiest way to describe it. There was no way I was getting a job as an IP attorney because you have to have that science background. So if that's the kind of law she wants to do, make sure that she has at least a minor of some kind in, you know, engineering or something, because that's going to help her if that's the route she wants to go.
Other than that, I'd
say don't do what I did.
That's the easiest way to put it.
Just don't do what I did.
Don't go through for the $3, 32 ounce rum and cokes on Sunday night. Got it.
Yeah. You know, you don't want to do that.
Unless you're just going for a good time.
I do appreciate the advice. Thank you.
Of course. I mean, if we want to talk about what not to do in life, I could certainly do that. I mean, I'm happy to answer those kinds of questions.
I think there's four of us that can answer those kind of questions. How about you, Rob? Can you answer some of those?
Green Leaf Tavern. That's the bar that I was trying to think of.
Free advertising, right there.
The other ridiculous thing about that – Williamsburg, it's different now, but when I was there, there was absolutely no public transportation. And obviously, Uber wasn't a thing. I mean, most of us had flip phones at the time. And so many people, not myself, but others, would drive to the bars and drive home. Like, that's just kind of what you did. Don't drink and drive, kids. The problem with this was the only place people would park would be at the football stadium across the street. And so on most nights, especially Sunday nights, local cops would just sit there and see people walk in with their mugs. See people walk out with their mugs
in a barrel.
And, yeah. And just get in the car. And it's just like, all right, you want this one? Like, yeah. Like you said, it was just like shooting fish in a barrel. So that's another thing. If you go to an establishment that has you bring your own mugs, don't drive home.
Just sleep there.
Just sleep there. But now you've got Uber, kids. Use Uber. Be smart.
Uber, Lyft. Yep.
Yeah.
No, it's all part of the. It's all stay home, stay safe. You know, you can have those kind of nights staying home, staying safe, right?
Yeah, I mean, now you can have the 32-ounce rum and coke, and that long trek home from the basement to the bedroom, you can probably get there on your own.
Right. So, Mark, this show here, we're kind of continuing a series we've been doing as far as, like, looking at rookie positions. We've already done running backs, wide receivers, and, you know, here's our quarterback episode, and, you know, to – you know, kind of paraphrase you a little bit. Why not bring in the worst backup quarterback in the worst college football division.
I mean,
to talk about some quarterbacks
Mark played
for our dynasty football owners out there. So, you know, we're just going to kind of cover teams that could be looking at quarterbacks. Well, we won't get too much into like free agency or anything like that, because that's, you know, we're far past that. But, you know, just big names and new places. And Rob, I'm going to kick this one to you first. You know, obviously Tom Brady going to Tampa Bay, that's a big name on the move there. And just kind of like all of us collective, I kind of want to get everybody's thoughts on that. I mean, where do you stand with that, Rob? How do you see that working with Brady there?
I think it's an interesting option, but obviously Tom Brady brings high football IQ and a winning pedigree to any football team. So I think just the morale boost in the locker room going from where they ended the season to now you have Tom Brady at the helm, whether he's the same quarterback he was 20 years ago or not, is kind of irrelevant. People still believe in Tom Brady, TB12. So TB and TB should be interesting. It's not the best fit for Bruce Arians' offense, but as far as fantasy goes, I still think he's going to be, you know, somewhat serviceable. I don't think you need to dump him. He's got great options down there. So he just can't push the ball downfield like he used to be able to. So interested to see what comes out of that.
Yeah, I am too, just for the fact that I love, and he's kind of backpedaled on it a little bit, but Bruce Arians said, if we can win with this quarterback, referencing Jameis Winston, we can win with any quarterback, which is kind of funny. I mean, what are your thoughts on it, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, we should have seen this coming. I actually, look, as somebody that covers the Patriots, like I have a Patriots podcast. I grew up in the Boston area. I write for a Patriots website. I was on radio after they lost to the Titans that next day, and I said, look, watch Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay might be a place where he would want to go to sort of challenge himself. Like Rob said, look, we're all looking at it. On paper, this doesn't seem like the right ideal scheme fit for where Tom Brady is in his career. But I think he sort of wanted the challenge of playing in a different system. I think the thing to remember with Tom Brady is somebody that is first as a fan and now as an analyst, like covered him and seen every game he's ever played. The reason why Tom Brady is Tom Brady is because of the chip on his shoulder and his ability to manufacture that chip on his shoulder. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, I've joked before, if you get into an elevator with him, before you get to your floor, he's going to tell you he was picked 199 in the draft. Like, doesn't matter. He's like, you know, what's the joke about somebody that does like CrossFit and somebody that's a vegetarian? Like, put Tom Brady in that. Like, who's going to tell you who they are first? It's probably Tom Brady. He was picked 199. He named his film company 199 Productions. And now what is he going to say? Bill Belichick gave up on me. And I know he said all the right things, but look, he's going to be driven to kill everybody next year. And I think, look, if you're looking at this from sort of a fantasy perspective, a dynasty perspective, like O.J. Howard is going to benefit finally. Like, we've been waiting for the O.J. Howard breakout. We've wondered about Bruce Arians' tight ends. Now you're going to see it because Brady loves throwing to tight ends and he loves throwing to slot receivers. So Chris Godwin as well, he's going to have a huge boost. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see Brady in this system, but I think he's going to do just fine. And, you know, there has been a drop off in his play, but I don't think it's going to be the sort of cliff that people have been expecting. He can still move in the pocket. He can still make throws when he needs to. He's going to be just fine. And I think he's just driven this year more than ever to prove everybody, including now Bill Belichick, wrong.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you bring up OJ Howard, because a handful of us in group chat have talked about this. And George, I think you were one of them, but correct me if I'm wrong, but there's some believers that Cameron Brate could be one to have a better year than O.J. Howard because of the Tom Brady situation. Were you one of them, George?
No, I think O.J. Howard is definitely more athletically gifted than Cameron Brate. I think you'll see Cameron Brate doing a lot more blocking for whoever they decide to draft. I'm assuming they're drafting a running back. I don't think that they're going into the season with Ronald Jones as their starting running back. I just can't see that. I think they're going to take a running back. And I think we'll see Cameron Brate on the field for the packages where he's got to stay in and help pass protect. The Bucs don't have a really good offensive line, so that's another reason why I think they would hold him back. He's a much better pass blocker than O.J. Howard. I think you'll see O.J. Howard being the field stretching tight end.
Yeah, and, you know, to Mark's point, too, I really like Chris Godwin a lot more this year even than I did last year. And, you know, coming to Mike Evans, I don't know, man. Like, I've been back and forth on this, but I almost feel like Mike Evans is going to be a little more touchdown dependent than he has in his career. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. That's kind of where I'm at. But, you know, one of the next big names that was on the move was Philip Rivers going to the Colts. I do like this move. He's definitely behind one of the better offensive lines in the game. Just not really sure about his weapons there and what they're going to be able to do with it. I mean, T.Y. Hilton's still there. We'll see what we get out of Paris Campbell here in year two, whether they add to that in the draft. Marlon Mack is not a running back that's going to fit him because of the lack of his receiving skills. But, George, I'm going to kick it to you first on this one. I mean, where's your head at with Rivers with the Colts?
So I think Rivers is a slight upgrade over Brissett. I think he's more accurate with the ball. I think he could throw it a little further and be accurate with the longer distance throws. I think they need to address their wide receiver. They need another wide receiver. I'm not sold that Paris Campbell is going to be able to step up this year. They traded their first round pick so to the 49ers, I believe. So I'm hoping that in the second round, they go out and get themselves another wide receiver to put across from T.Y. Hilton. If they do, I think they have the pieces there. Solid defense, great offensive line, decent quarterback. I think they can make a serious run and make the playoffs.
What are your thoughts, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with George there. I think this is an upgrade at the quarterback position. I think part of it will be determined by which version of Rivers you get. In 2018, he was one of the better quarterbacks when pressured. He was a top five quarterback in PFF's adjusted completion percentage when pressured, of an adjusted completion percentage of 71.6, and that dropped to like 64% last year. So playing behind guys like, you know, Quentin Nelson and getting Anthony Costanzo back is huge. You know, they did, like George said, they traded out a 13. That's probably where most people look at Ruggs, Lamb, Judy, like starting to come off the board. I mean, every mock draft I've done, every one I've seen, San Francisco is now taking a wide receiver there. But they pick at 34 and 44, you know. And so they might see whether it's like a guy like Denzel Mims, you know, falling out of the first round, or maybe he's off the board, but a guy like T. Higgins, you know, somebody might be there 34 and 44. Or they could package those two and move up if, like, say, Justin Jefferson is in a spot where they think, look, we want to get to, say, a team that might want to trade out, like, say, New England at 23 that wants to accumulate picks in the second round. And so I think this is a very nice situation. You look around at the rest of the AFC South. I mean, who knows what the world Houston is doing. Jacksonville seems to be a year or two away.
We had some good laughs about that situation in our last show.
Yeah, I have no idea what Bill O'Brien's doing. And as much as I love Jim
Neither
Nagy.
Neither does he.
As much as I love Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, like when he tweeted out like, hey, you know, what if Houston actually wins the Super Bowl? Like, we'll all be silent then. I'm like, no, we won't, because that's never happening, Jim. Like, they're not winning the Super Bowl. I mean, let's be honest. They're just not going to. So, like, yeah, you know, Tennessee's obviously coming off a run to the AFC Championship, but that division seems pretty open. They could certainly make a run, and I think Rivers is going to be a big part of that.
Yeah. How about you, Rob?
I like basically everything you guys said there. Rivers behind a more solid offensive line is going to give him time to I've always been blown away by his throwing motion, but Schott put the ball to another T.Y. Hilton. Paris Campbell's not it. I do think Nyheim Hines is a name that's worth mentioning, though, as their pass catching back. He might gain some PPR value with Philip Rivers. He's certainly not Austin Eckler, but he is blinding fast, and I don't think he's gotten any slower in the last 2 years. So, you know, that's a guy that maybe if he's been sitting on your bench for a while, you might want to think about looking at him getting a couple weeks into the season. Or, you know, hopefully maybe Paris Campbell can take off, but there is speed there, and they do need that big-bodied receiver. If they can get somebody who can really dominate those third-down possession red zone targets, I think they could be really dangerous.
Yeah, I think that was their plan when they drafted Deion Kane a couple of years ago, but obviously that fell through. George, what were you going to add?
I don't think a lot of people remember that the Colts started, what, like 5-2 or 7-2 or something like that last year, and then they just fell off the cliff the back half due to injuries. Not a whole lot really has changed on the team other than a huge upgrade at quarterback. I mean, literally we're looking at a team that can go out and probably put together a 10 or 11 win season. That is definitely within the realm of outcomes for them. Based off of how they started the season last year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. It definitely makes them better, and depending on what they add to it, it's going to make it a little more interesting. Next name I want to look at here, Mark, I'm going to kick this to you first because, you know, New England at times is tied to Cam Newton. Like everybody talks about the Chargers and New England, and we talked a little bit pre-show about our thoughts on that. I mean, where's a realistic landing spot you see for Cam Newton in 2020?
I mean, I still think that the most realistic is probably the Chargers. I know, like you said, you know, Steve, like, a lot of people have made that connection, you know, Cam Newton to New England. They don't have the salary cap space right now. Like they would have to make a move or two unless Cam Newton wants to come in on an incentive-laden contract, which I doubt he wants to do. They'd have to make a move like trading Joe Tooney, who they just put the franchise tag on. And so I think that from New England's perspective, their game plan, and from what I've been told by people in and around the team, they like Jared Stidham, is to see what they have in Jared Stidham. And you look at the correspondent moves they made at the position. What do? They bring in Brian Hoyer. Well, what's he? He's the Josh McCown, the veteran mentor backup type guy to help Jared Stidham develop. You know, I don't think they make a move like that if they're going to turn around and sign Cam Newton. Now, look, I've been trying to figure out what Bill Belichick has going on in his head for a long time. And while we went to the same university, we do not occupy the same plane when it comes to brain space on the football field and then around the football field. So I'm just sitting there throwing darts at a board, believe me. So I do think that the Chargers make the most sense. They're telling us that they're all in on Tyrod Taylor. They're telling us that, you know, they're linked to a bunch of quarterbacks as well. But I do think that they're in a position where if they want to draft somebody at six, great, but they could also just sign Cam Newton. They have the space to do it. I think that's probably a better situation for Cam Newton as well because the scheme fits better. You know, you're talking about a new offensive coordinator that is has a background in the Air Coryell downfield passing game. He cut his teeth under Rod Chudzinski. That's kind of what Newton's been in his entire career in Carolina. And so I think the Chargers make much more sense for Cam Newton. But having said that, I'll probably check my Twitter feed right now and we'll find out if Cam Newton just signed in New England, in which case you can hopefully edit out this entire portion of my answer.
No, we would leave it in just because.
No, good. You should.
You know, just for entertainment value purposes.
Just like snip it and put it on the timeline just as is. Like, look at this idiot.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Rob, what say you, man?
So I think Cam Newton is definitely going to end up to be a Charger if they don't get their guy in the draft. Tyrod Taylor has had a few opportunities to start in the league, and I don't think he's blown anybody away, but he's serviceable, and if you get stuck with him, it's not the worst thing in the world. But obviously you want an upgrade, and Cam Newton is that. I think they're probably eyeing Justin Herbert or Tua if he falls, somebody who's mobile and can run that type of offense. So I think Cam Newton is probably going to have to wait for the draft. That's my answer. And I agree though. The Chargers is probably the most likely area.
Let's say you, George.
I'm toting the company line here. I think the Chargers absolutely make the most sense. I don't think anything is done with Cam Newton though, until after the draft. I think they want to see what goes on with Tua, what goes on with Herbert. If one or, well, I don't think Tua's going to fall to them. I'm on record. I think Tua is going to Miami if he gets to number five. I don't think the Dolphins are going to trade up for him. They may, but I don't think they will. I think the Chargers are actually in a decent spot. I kind of like Tyrod Taylor. He did manage to take the Bills to the playoffs a few years ago. I think he got a raw deal in Cleveland where they brought him in, and then they went out and drafted Baker, number one overall. I think Tyrod Taylor is got that little chip on his shoulder that he knows he's good. He knows he could play. He does have a decent game, and I think he's going to try to do everything he can to go out and show, hey, you don't need somebody. You know, I'm here. I've been here the whole time.
I thought you were going to bring up your Dolphins there because that's another team for whatever reason, even though it doesn't make sense to me, is another team that it sits in my head with that situation because, I mean, a lot of people are pointing at the Chargers, and there are those that are pointing at New England, like we talked about. But Miami is a team that obviously needs a quarterback. So Cam Newton and then, you know, Jameis Winston, who we're going to talk about here in a second, like those guys are going to be hanging out till after the draft anyways. They're quarterback needy teams, whether it's guys of the future, whether it's they're going to need a starter for 2020 or whatever. I think it's got to go through that process before those guys land. you know, Jameis Winston, you know, that we all know what kind of season he had. He had threw for 5,000 yards. He had 30 and 30. It's, you know, it's a big stat everybody keeps talking about, yada, yada, yada. He's the guy that I think if he's going to start again in the NFL, he's going to have to be in the right situation with the right coach, you know, because the guy, like, there's times that he's just like, oh, man, really? Like, and you're really is, it's either, what the hell did you just do? Or, wow, I can't believe he just pulled that off type thing. So it's, you never know what you're going to get with that guy. But I mean, you know, Mark, I'm going to kick this to you again, man. I mean, what's a good spot for you for Jameis?
I mean, I think we're in a situation right now where there's not going to be a starting job for him. Nope. I would be stunned if a team is going to say, you know what, we loved what you did last year. Here are the keys to the franchise. Just go nuts. It'd be like handing the keys to your 15-year-old and say, look, we just got a brand new car. You just got your learners. Just take it for a spin. Have some fun. Like, you're just asking for trouble at that point. Honestly, I think an interesting spot for him would be the Giants. And I know, look, they're set with Daniel Jones, at least. That's what their vision for the future is. But you look at hiring, you know, Jason Garrett as an offensive coordinator. You know, he's more of that downfield school type of passer, more of that Coryell system, you know, which is obviously what Jameis was coming from last year. He could go to New York City and not play right away. I mean, since he got into the league, like, other than being benched or injured here or there, he's been the guy. Now he can sort of just be another football player and perhaps learn to – I don't want to say make fewer mistakes because I think Jameis just is who he is. This is the kind of quarterback he is. But he'd be in a situation where the offense would be familiar enough that if something happens to Daniel Jones, he could come in and be effective. You know, you look at some of the guys like Evan Engram, you know, Sterling Sharp. They're going to probably add a receiver in this draft. I love Darius Slayton coming out. I think he's got a good rapport with Daniel Jones, but I think he's a good receiver to begin with. Saquon Barkley, there are some weapons there to work with. And so that would be a situation where he could come off the bench and perhaps provide a little bit of a spark. But I've been intrigued by the Giants idea.
Yeah. The only thing that worries me about Sterling Shepard and that whole situation is just, man, that guy, man, his injury history is very scary. No, yeah. he concerns me. Rob, George, if you guys got anything you want to add, feel free to do so. But I think it's just, you know, with him, it's going to be, you know, after the draft and then from there, you know, who is it he's going to be behind? You know, it's very difficult to say who's going to be a starter unless something crazy happens. But, I mean, he's been linked to Pittsburgh. He's been linked to potentially, like, you know, New Orleans or Atlanta staying in that same division. Like, teams that he could go to and at least be a valuable backup quarterback. So, I mean, if you guys got anything you want to add, feel free to do so.
Not really add, but just expound on Pittsburgh. I think he would fit well behind Ben Roethlisberger, and they found out very quickly last year that their backup quarterback game is weak. So I think Jameis Winston would be a huge upgrade over Mason Rudolph, Duck Hodges, and whomever it was that came in that was the other guy that played quarterback for them last year. I don't even remember his name. He didn't look bad, though. Kind of looked better than Duck in a few throws. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same line of thinking that Rob is. I think Pittsburgh, they definitely know the value of having a good backup quarterback. I think Jameis is a solid backup quarterback at this point. He could go there. It's kind of the same offensive scheme that they had in Tampa with Bruce Arians, where Mike Tomlin doesn't mind throwing the ball down the field. You've got the weapons on the outside with Juju and Deontay Johnson that can stretch the field. I don't know how you guys personally feel about James Conner. I think he's still, you know, top 15 to 18 running back in the NFL. So he's serviceable, kind of what they had, and a little bit better than what they had actually in Tampa. The only way, Rob, circling back to Miami, the only way I could see Miami signing either one of these guys is if something totally just ridiculous happens in the draft. Like, okay, Burrow goes number one overall. That's fine. We expect that. But then, like, Washington goes and loses their mind, and they draft Tua. And then at three, the Lions trade back with the Chargers, and they come up and take Herbert. Like, if those three quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, and none of them go to Miami, then I could see Miami in the sweepstakes for Jameis or Cam Newton. But outside of that, I don't see them looking at either one of these guys. Miami loves what they got in Fitzpatrick. They want a younger quarterback to be able to sit behind him to groom. And Winston and Cam Newton do not fit that mold of what Miami's looking for right now.
And Fitzpatrick needs somebody to groom his beard while he's on the sideline in between series, you know. So
well Winston,
definitely gets away there for that.
Winston does have that experience. He groomed it for 2 years ago for a little, for some of them games. So he's got that experience.
And now he's got the LASIK too, so he'll be able to see what he's doing.
Who would have thunk? Who would have ever thunk that having good vision correlates to being a better quarterback? Who? Mind blowing.
Certainly not me. Which I don't.
So before we jump into talking about some of these rookies, I'm just going to go down a list real quick. You know, these are teams that could use some quarterbacks, whether it's, you know, right now, future, whatever. So you're looking at the Bengals, obviously. You know, the Bucs that we've talked about. You know, if they're going to draft somebody that's going to sit behind Brady for a year or two. Obviously, we talked about the Chargers situation. You know, we know about what's going on with the Colts, the Dolphins, the Jaguars. You know, what are the Lions going to do? You know, are they going to wait another year or two? That they need to put a legitimate quarter or backup behind Matthew Stafford. That's been proven. It needs to happen. It should have been happened for years. But, you know, are they going to look to the future possibly with that? You know, we talked about the Patriots. You know, you look at the Raiders. You know, are they going to want to look to potentially, you know, get the ball rolling to move on from Carr? You know, he's not the guy that's going to take them to the next level. You know, the Redskins, I mean, you look at what happened in Arizona, but with Rosen and Murray, you know, are we looking at the same scenario with Haskins and George, to your point that you brought up, you know, are they going to take Tua? You know, and then there's the Saints. You have the future after Breeze, you know, especially with Bridgewater going, moving on. And then you look at the Steelers. Obviously, we saw what happened last year with Ben. And then Ben at his age, man, and coming back from that elbow injury is kind of concerning. I guess we'll see what happens with there. But those are all teams to think about and, you know, what they could do with their quarterback position as far as the draft goes and free agency, so on and so forth. So diving into these rookies here, obviously the first guy we're going to talk about is Joe Burrow. And I'm looking at Joe Burrow, this guy, he's a complete package. He has a great football IQ, great decision maker. You know, he throws wide receivers away from coverage, can hit the tight windows. This guy's got a bright future. I just love the way that he plays. And I really can't wait to see what this guy can do at the next level. Mark, I'm going to kick this right over to you. I mean, what do you see when you watch Joe Burrow play football?
You know, I'm not one to sort of throw out comps, like especially with the quarterback position,
yeah,
like all
either.
Quarterbacks, they're so different. But I'll tell you, I see shades of Tony Romo. That's one that a lot of people have talked about, but I see, and I obviously say this, you know, I don't say this lightly, but I see shades of Tom Brady. And what I mean by that is what made Tom Brady excel on the football field was his ability to sort of avoid pressure and create space and avoid sacks and extend plays, even though he's not the world's greatest athlete. And you see Burrow is an athletic guy, but that ability to sort of use his feet to create space. I love Burrow's footwork in the pocket. Like, you look at some of their run designs, you look at some of their RPO designs, you look at some of their passing designs, his feet are always at the ready to throw. Like, he doesn't miss a second. Like, some quarterbacks, their feet aren't ready. They have to take that half second to get the feet ready to throw, or they don't, and it impacts the placement, the velocity, and all that stuff. You don't see that with Joe Burrow. You have the competitive toughness. You have the downfield accuracy. You have the accuracy to all levels. You have the ball placement at an elite level to the short and intermediate areas of the field. And the other thing to keep in mind with Joe Burrow is, you know, people have said, oh, well, it's really Joe Brady's offense. And, you know, he was bad in 2018. I thought he was okay in 2018. I thought he'd be a guy that would probably get drafted sometime on day three. But in Joe Brady's offense, they ran pretty much a vast majority of five-man protection schemes, which means Burrow, the quarterback, was responsible for that sixth rusher. If they're bringing six, you've got to either throw off him in a heart read or evade him with your feet. That's going to get him ready for the NFL. Like, that puts a lot on a quarterback's plate, but he was able to handle it. We saw how he did. I think he's as clean as it gets in the last couple of years at the quarterback position. I think whether it's Cincinnati at one or even Kansas City at 32, like all 32 teams, like, he'd be fine in those situations. Now, obviously, look, the Chiefs aren't drafting him, but this kid's going to be fine, I think.
I thought you were giving us a hot take there for a second.
Yeah, look, if you're Kansas City and Andy Reid, just, you know what, move on from that Mahomes guy. He's not that good. Trade up, go get Burrow. And, you know, if Mahomes finds his way to New England, I guess that would be a fine.
I was just going to say, Mahomes to New England, Burrow to KC.
As a Dolphins fan, I would just quit football altogether at this point.
Yeah, well, I have a scenario for you, George, to worry about. We can talk about it a little later. I'm just going to throw something out there before we go.
That's fine. Jesus. So I do want to let you know, I am I live in Florida. I am a Miami Dolphin fan. I was born in New England. My whole family is Patriots fans.
I'm doubly sorry about that.
So with that being said, George, I mean, no, where are you at with Joe Burrow?
I do think he would be the second best quarterback in this draft if there wasn't injury concerns with Tua. I absolutely love Tua. I am hoping to God he somehow gets to Miami, whether they trade up for him or he happens to fall to number five. I am not really overly concerned about his hip just because I don't think Miami wants him to come in and start day one anyway. I know I'm talking about Tua and I should be talking about Burrow, but I kind of transitioned right away.
I know. I was going to say, man, geez, I mean, you're just moving on. I forget about Joe Burrow.
Listen, you asked me to follow up Mark with Joe Burrow and that just was not fair. Like you said, like, what am I going to tell you that that gentleman just did not tell you? I mean, there's nothing else for me to add.
Yeah, but I just really wanted to see you try.
Well, I did. I tried. I made a flawless transition to Tua.
He pivoted to Tua. It was fantastic. It looks better than Tua's hip right now.
Rob, you want to get in on Tua before Mark tells us everything we need to know?
I believe you pronounce his last name Tagovailoa.
Nailed it.
Yep.
Boom. I like it. Yeah, no, Tua's going to be he's going to be legit. I mean, he's definitely the best dual threat quarterback in this class. I still think even if he was healthy, I would still take Joe Burrow over Tua. Just cuz I don't know. Burrow does have a very high football IQ, but Tua, again, with him, he has a quick release. He can throw into windows and accurately, but one of the better things about Tua that I really like is the way he can manipulate safeties. So, this is another guy that a lot of hinges on that hip. And I've seen and heard a lot of people compare it to, like, you know, look what happened to Bo Jackson. Well, different time, different era, medicine, the way guys are rehabilitated anymore, it's a different realm. It's a different era. So I personally think he's going to be okay. We've seen a lot of positive feedback come back from all of that. And the guy obviously had a very successful career in Alabama. But Rob, before I let Mark take it over there. I mean, like, what do you see with Tua? Like, what is it you like to see about this guy? And is there a team you can see him on outside of the obvious anyways?
No, not outside of the obvious. I think Washington would be stupid to take Tua over Chase Williams. Chase Young. Good Lord, Chase Williams. Who is that? Chase Young.
Some dude. So,
yeah.
Bankers.
That dude is somebody. But hopefully they don't take him either.
I know the Zoom draft might confuse some general managers, but that would be a stunner. Drafted a banker.
That would be a reach.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really do think he ends up in Miami. I think that script is almost written. I think the Chargers may move up if they really like him a lot and they try and put together a big package to do it. I think it'd be, you know, a smart move, but I think he ends up at Miami in five. I mean, I can't really say anything that you guys haven't, other than I said his last name right. So Mark, on to you for the announcer.
Cause I could see him dropping to five cause the Lions are tied to Okuda too. A lot.
Yeah. I mean, the only sort of crazy scenario is, you know, Stephen, when you did this sort of rundown of teams that might be interested in a quarterback, like the Lions have a decision to make with Stafford. And it's a lot easier to get out from his contract prior to next season than it is right now, which is why they might look at a quarterback somewhat early in this draft. You know, from talking to people that cover that team, you know, they wouldn't rule out the idea of Detroit shocking the world and drafting Tua, knowing that, look, they could redshirt him for a year and then plug him in next year. I'd say it's like a 5% chance that it happens, but it's certainly possible. You know, I do think, look, the common teams that everybody's sort of thrown out there, like Miami, obviously makes some sense, the Chargers, of course. Before the Teddy Bridgewater situation, I thought, you know, Carolina might have been a good fit because you look at the offense that Tua is used to running. sort of that spread West Coast RPO type stuff with Sarkisian. That's what Joe Brady's going to be running for the Panthers. And so had they not done the Bridgewater thing, I thought that would have made some sense. You know, I think if you take the medical stuff aside, Tua is also a very clean prospect. Like if you take the medicals aside, Burrow 1, Tua 2, Burrow 1A, Tua 1B, like however you want to delineate those guys, Tua 1A, Burrow 1B, like, okay. I have Burrow at 1, Tua at 2, but I think they're both very clean prospects. It's the medical stuff that's obviously the concern. And I know we're hearing right now that teams are failing them from a physical standpoint. I wouldn't believe a word of that.
No.
I mean, when Mike Lombardi is the one out there saying it, and look, I like Mike Lombardi. I think he's a smart guy. But that is coming straight from Bill Belichick's mouth. I would almost guarantee it because I'm sure Bill Belichick would love to be in a situation where he could perhaps pull the trigger on Tua and redshirt him for a year. I don't think it could happen, but I'm sure that's probably what's trying to be bandied about right now. I think Tua doesn't get out of the top five or six. If he somehow does, though, same thing could be said about Herbert. There's a fall potential there because you look at the rest of the first round, who else do you really see drafting a quarterback, say, in the like teens now, given what's happened in free agency? But as far as Tua, if the hip clears, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, you know, going to your point where you can see a fall too, because at the skilled positions, there's just so much depth in this draft too, which, you know, I was talking to these guys, I think, before you jumped on pre-show here, Mark. I see four starting quarterbacks almost immediately, and there's a potential to be five or six, you know, as a whole good quarterbacks out of this class. So,
yeah.
Very curious to see what's going to happen in a lot of these situations. You know, when talking about Herbert, you know, just from that conference alone, you know, I really hesitate with him. But, you know, when you watch his film and you look at him statistically, I mean, Herbert, one thing I really like about him is the way he scans the field and the way he keeps the ball tight to his frame while he does that and allows him to get that quick release and so on and so forth. And he understands pro concepts and he can read zones and he's got a strong arm. But one thing that he does really well is he sells the shit out of play action, man. I mean, he does really, really well at that. Where he lands, I think is going to help out too. But I think this guy has the potential to be something pretty special. But again, I think it's going to be more so where he lands as far as what scheme and whatnot. George, what do you see with Herbert?
Pretty much agreed with what you said. Like, it's really going to depend on where he lands. I think if Tua and Burrow go in the top five, like most people think they will, I think he will be going to Los Angeles. I think he'll be a Charger. I think he's going to sit for about half the season behind Tyrod, and then he'll take over probably after their bye week. I think that's where most people have him pegged to go. And much like we talked about earlier with Cam Newton, I think that kind of makes sense for him. I think it would be a good situation for him. They would be surrounding him with plenty of weapons on the offensive side with Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, to bring back Hunter Henry. You got Austin Eckler in the backfield there. So, you know, it's not all going to be on him to go out and win the games right off the bat. And I think, you know, being able to take that pressure off of a rookie quarterback is understated sometimes.
What say you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Steven, you kind of nailed a lot of the stuff that there is to like about Herbert. I mean, one thing that I will add, his ability to read and throw against leverage defenders, I think, is extremely impressive. And that's going to certainly help him as well, in addition to his ability to read a defense and manipulate people and things like that. You know, there are sometimes throws that stick in your mind. And he had a throw against Cal from 2018 where they were running the switch verticals concept to the left, balls on the right hash mark, slot receiver bends to the outside, comes vertically. He sees it's man coverage. They're not switching it, so that slot defender has to get to the outside. He knows that he's not going to get to the outside, so he throws a back shoulder ball, but he does it 40 yards downfield, like on a rope from the right hash mark to the left sideline. Like, that stuff you can't teach. I mean, that stuff I couldn't do with a golf ball and a driver right now. But he's able to do it with a simple flick of the wrist. And so, look, like the kid can make throws. I mean, there are times when I feel like he needs to get a better feel for throwing over the middle a bit. That offense did him no favors. That's why the Senior Bowl was huge for him. And he was great that week. Like, it was clear he was the best quarterback down in Mobile. Like, Jalen Hurts looked good at times. Jordan Love looked good at times. Shea Patterson even looked good before the rest of the week happened. But Justin Herbert was like the guy down there, and it made sense. And so, you know, he's handled things the right way. He's been great at the podium with the media. You could tell that he's like sort of taken it upon himself to like prove to teams that he can be a leader. And I think the Chargers make a ton of sense for him. But if he gets past them at six, like, that's where the fall comes, right? Yep. You know, because you look at the rest of these teams, you know, before Tampa Bay went the Brady route, I would have thought maybe they'd go quarterback at 14. Well, the Colts traded out of 13, so I don't think San Francisco's coming to draft a quarterback. Nope. Vegas, they've got Carr and Mariota now. You can see a fall to maybe the 20s where maybe a team thinks about getting back into the first round. So, yeah, that's going to be the sort of like fulcrum of the quarterbacks in this first round, is that spot, I'd say, at six.
Yeah. You know, very, very curious to see when you talk about that fall, and you brought up San Francisco. And like, I mean, I've been one that, and I'm a 49ers fan. I love Jimmy Garoppolo, but I kind of feel like Shanahan is going to be looking for somebody, whether it's going to be this year, whether it's going to be next year, and not necessarily to take over right away, but to just kind of groom. Because one thing Shanahan does really well is he schemes the offense to take the pressure off the quarterback. And you get a good young talent that you can groom for a couple years and get used to the system and stuff like that. And then you can just vault him into that situation and just let his natural talents and abilities take over. I think a really good quarterback could do a lot of damage in that offense.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you could almost say that they might have that guy in Nick Mullins. I mean, he looked good when he had to play when Garoppolo was hurt. And I've written piece after piece at Pat's Pulpit and elsewhere saying, look, hey, Patriots fans, you want your next quarterback? This Nick Mullins guy. You know, maybe Shanahan and Lynch will do us a solid after the Garoppolo trade and send us Nick Mullins. And, of course, it hasn't happened. There's a reason they're hanging on to this kid. And so they might have a guy that they're looking, like you said, Stephen, to sort of groom and develop, where if Garoppolo struggles or gets hurt or whatever, they've got their guy. Now, if Herbert falls to them at the end of the first round, you know, maybe they decide, hey, you know, we'll take a shot. Or Jordan Love is there, maybe. But I think they like Mullins.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised a lot of teams, and maybe they have, it just hasn't been publicized, but yeah. I'm surprised a lot of teams haven't really reached out about Mullins.
Same.
You know, you brought up Jordan Love a second ago, and Rob, I'm going to kick this to you first here in a second, but, you know, one of the things that I really like about this guy is he's a natural thrower. He's confident. You know, he's very good as far as, like, deep balls, intermediate throws. You know, he really – one of the things that really sticks out to me about him is the touch that he has on the deep ball. And you get this guy in an offense that's going to push the ball down the field. I think he can really excel a lot more that way. You know, and he has the abilities to create, you know, kind of improvise on the field and so on and so forth. I think this guy has a lot of talent and you know, looking at the fantasy football, the dynasty world, I think this is the type of quarterback — we're talking about this a little bit pre-show — is that, you know, while a lot of people are going to be killing themselves to get to a get Burrow, get Herbert or whatever, this is a guy you're going to kind of be able to sit back and get yourself an actual NFL caliber quarterback a little bit later on in your drafts. I mean, Rob, when you look at Jordan Love or some of the things that you've seen about him or read about him or whatever, I mean, what is it that you see? What is it that you like about Jordan Love?
My first exposure to all of these guys, but obviously not Tua or Joe Burrow, as just throwers, throwing the football, was this year's combine. And I'll tell you, Jordan Love was the guy that threw, I thought, the nicest ball. He had a very nice release. Ball came in naturally to the receivers. He looked good throwing it. He looked confident. And he looked good in all the different throws, both inside out, long balls. I actually like Jordan Love a lot coming out of that. And I hope he gets to the right team, because I think Dak Prescott is going to help pave his way to getting drafted earlier because there are a lot of people who I myself don't like to make comps either, really, because like you said before, each quarterback is unique. But I do think that a lot of people see shades of Dak Prescott and Jordan Love, and I think that's going to keep him from falling too far in the draft, because Dak was taken third or fourth round, I believe.
He's fourth rounder.
Yeah, so I think that's going to make teams kind of pull the trigger a little bit earlier on Jordan Love. And if he ends up with the right offense, sits for a year, gets to really learn about how the speed the NFL is played, I think he could do a lot of damage next season or two seasons from now.
What about you, Mark?
You know, the NFL does have a type at the quarterback position. It's the guy with the big arm and the size and the athleticism. And Jordan Love checks all of those boxes. Yep. And I know that, you know, interestingly enough, everything that I just said about Justin Herbert being the most impressive quarterback down in Mobile is absolutely true. But I was also told by different teams that all of that being said, they might still prefer Love to Herbert. Because of that potential, because of his ceiling, because of the arm, the athleticism, the size and all that stuff, which, again, Herbert has. But teams are looking at Justin Herbert as more of a finished product. And offensive coordinators and quarterback coaches are looking at Jordan Love and say, man, I can coach that guy up. I can make him great. The problem is we hear that every year, right? We hear that with the Josh Allens and the Paxton Lynches and all these guys, these like big athletic toolsy type guys that – you don't really develop quarterbacks the way we used to. You don't have the 3-year plan where you sit them down, they let them hold a clipboard and learn. Now the name of the game is get the guy on a rookie deal and compete while he's cheap, you know, sort of the Seahawks model, the Rams model, the Bears model. And maybe you win a Super Bowl, maybe you don't. And now you're less needed and you're paying like $80 million to Goff and Gurley and Cooks. And they're not, two of them aren't even on your team anymore. And so you have to maximize that window. And so the team that drafts Jordan Love might think they can develop him and coach him up, but there's going to be an impetus to get him on the field sooner rather than later. You know, I have questions about the decision-making. Obviously, the 17 interceptions last year, he was cleaner in terms of the lack of turnovers the year before, but still had some poor decisions in 2018. But it doesn't matter. It won't change the fact that teams are going to look at him and think, well, they made it work with Josh Allen, so we can make it work with our guy. And so
that's actually he's going to get a good point.
He's going to get drafted sooner rather than later. I would have loved, you know, before they traded out, I thought Indy at 13 made a ton of sense because you could even still sit him beside Phillip Rivers for 1 year. Frank Reich at least has a bit of a track record in developing a quarterback. He was part of the team that developed Carson Wentz in Philly. And I thought that would be an ideal situation for Jordan Love. Now, maybe he experiences that fall and falls to a team late in the first round that wants to get back in, perhaps to the first round for the fifth-year option, or even to the top of the second like Drew Locke did, and there's less of an impetus to get him on the field. But if he has to play early, I'm a bit wary about that.
Yeah, and a lot of it too, you know, like pretty much a lot of situations is where he lands, how he needs to develop, so on and so forth, kind of to your point there. But yeah, I think this guy has a lot of ability and really could have a bright future in the NFL. So he's one that I'm kind of excited about outside of the bigger names. So, you know, again, I guess we'll see how that all pans out. Now, another guy that I think had some, you know, better stock, we'll say, if he would have came out last year is Jake Fromm. He's a guy that I think that like worst case scenario, he will be a legitimate backup quarterback in the NFL. But he does have the upside to be a starter. And I was trying to look earlier and then just kind of fact check myself. But if I'm not mistaken, Georgia in general, coaching staff, just personnel and all that, they had some turnover last year. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, they did.
And I think that kind of played into that situation for him. So I really want to see where this goes with him at the next level. Because, again, I think he has the ability to be there. You know, he does have the tangibles and so on and so forth. But, you know, George, you look at Jake Fromm, if you look at him in 2018 to 2019, you know, where you realistically could see him go in the draft or whatnot. I mean, what are some of the things you're seeing?
I honestly, I think he missed his window to come out. I think he should have came out last year. I think he would have been a for sure first round pick. He's one of these guys I'm not sold on. I agree. He will be a solid backup quarterback. I'm not sure he will. He may even be a serviceable starting quarterback in spots, but I don't think he's going to be like your long-term quarterback that you want as your starter. You know, I don't think he's going to be able to lead a team to a championship. It's definitely going to depend on where he goes. One of the teams I think I could see him possibly going to is maybe Atlanta and sitting behind Matt Ryan for a couple of years, getting coached up there, and then, you know, eventually taking over that spot possibly. But I'm not sold on Jake Fromm.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I think George kind of nailed it when he used the phrase, he's not the guy that's going to lead a team to a championship. And I think that's sort of exactly right. Like, we're getting to the point in this draft class where the quarterbacks are very scheme dependent. And when I look at Jake Fromm, I see a guy that for a handful of teams, he could walk in and be a week one starter. Like, I would say Chicago before the Nick Foles situation, like, he could walk in right now and run that Chicago Bears offense and run it extremely well. You know, I think you could say something similar about, you know, New England. Like, I think he could run the Patriots offense and run it well. But he's not going to be the guy that you're going to win because of. Or like George said, he's not going to be the guy that will lead a team to a championship. A team might win with him. You know, a team might win with him as like a point guard type quarterback that's a facilitator that's making the right throw, the right read on time, you know, in rhythm and things like that. But he's not going to be somebody that's going to throw the ball like 65 times and will your team to a win. Like, that's just not who he is. He's a guy that is like a point guard. He's like a Kirk Cousins. Like, that's the kind of quarterback he is. The one thing about him that I think works in his favor, though, which is why I think he's going to go sooner than people expect in the draft, the mental part of it. Like, he's somebody that from the day he walked into that starting lineup was doing everything in the line of scrimmage, calls, audibles, checks, protections, all that stuff. And so while he looked awful at the combine and the parts we could see, the parts we didn't, when he got into a hotel suite and got on a whiteboard and drew up protections and everything he was asked to do, I'm sure he crushed that part of it. And so some teams sitting there in the third round, like say the New England Patriots with those comp picks at the end of the third round, for example, they're going to love what he did from a mental perspective and they'll bet on that.
Yeah, he definitely does have that aspect of it, man. I mean, he's very familiar with pro schemes and whatnot. So that's why I think he has the upside, at least. And I guess it all just kind of develops from there.
Yeah, exactly.
So next guy here, Jalen Hurts. He's one that, man, I think he's going to be one that's just, even if it's scheme dependent, that he's just going to be a backup quarterback. He's kind of like one of those gadget quarterbacks that can make the intermediate throws. And, you know, he shows good poise and he makes plays and so on and so forth. And the guy is a natural leader. We saw it on the field firsthand, you know. But yeah, again, I just see him mainly as a backup quarterback at the NFL level. I mean, Rob, what do you see when you look at Jalen Hurts?
Man, when I saw his first game at Oklahoma last season, I thought, wow, Jalen Hurts is for real. And then he looked good throughout the season. He's impressive. But I think he kind of reminds me a little bit of Tyree Jackson, which is not necessarily a great thing. Just a big guy who's mobile, and it seems like a great idea. But I don't know that he's accurate enough to continue on at the next level with pro cornerbacks out there, pro safeties. So I think he's serviceable as a backup, Steve. But I'm hoping that he doesn't come anywhere near Baltimore.
George, I know you're kind of high on Hurts, man.
I am.
What are you looking at? I mean, what is it that you're seeing that we're not?
I like the fact that he is a natural leader. I don't think he's going to be drafted to be the starting quarterback on a team. I think somebody's going to draft him. They're going to have him as a backup. He's got the leadership. You know, he is a decent quarterback. I think what he needs, and I don't, you know, I'm not sitting here saying I wish injury on anybody. I don't. I don't want any NFL player ever to get injured. But it's a man's game. It's a physical game, and injuries do happen. And I think if he gets into a situation where the starter goes down and they have to put him in, I think he can go out and I think he can win games for you. I think he commands the team. He's very disciplined. He was the first guy in, and normally the last guy out in college. At least that's the reports I've seen. I think when he gets to the NFL level, I think it's going to translate really well. I think he's going to immediately get the respect of his teammates through his toughness and his discipline. And I think when he gets that opportunity, because eventually I think he's going to get an opportunity, a team is going to want to see what they have in him. He's going to go out, and I think he'll be an above average quarterback. If you asked me where I thought he might go, I think a perfect situation for him would be Green Bay. Go to Green Bay, sit behind Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is getting up there in age. If he gets injured, I think Hurts will be able to step in and be able to run that system just fine.
What say you, Mark?
I wouldn't bet on it, but I wouldn't be stunned if he comes off the board in the first round. And I know that might be a bit of a shock, but the league loves this kid. And everything George was just describing about him is absolutely right. I mean, the image, the video of him in his pads with the shoulder pads off, but everything else on after a game against Oklahoma that they had won, and he's back in the weight room already. Like, it sounds and it is cheesy, and that's who he is. Like, he's a guy that, you know, he loses his job to Tua, goes back to compete for it the next year, and when he loses it again, stays and helps him, and they found ways to get him on the field. He was still a leader there. He goes to Oklahoma, he's an immediate leader and captain for that team. Like, the things that he does on the field need some work. I mean, 3.08 seconds snap to throw would have been the slowest in the NFL, like, by far. But that's what he does. He's very much a see it, throw it passer. But I think what's impressed me about him throughout this entire process, he's had a great pre-draft process, is the throw mechanics are getting tighter. The ball is popping out of his hands a little bit better. He's really sort of refined himself from a mechanical standpoint. And he's reminiscent to me of Dak. And I missed wildly on Dak Prescott. Like, Dak was like my quarterback 15 that draft year. But the thing that I hated about Prescott was mechanics were sloppy at times and he didn't have great ball placement. And I see that with Hurts. But I missed the competitive toughness that Dak Prescott brought to the table. Hurts has that. And so I think the league's going to love him. Now, maybe, you know, he ends up like a day two kind of guy, but I think he's going to go earlier than people expect. And like George, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up having a good career as a result.
I can't honestly think of any quarterback in this draft class that would have been the starter, get replaced in a championship game, and not transfer the next year. Hurts didn't do that. He said, no, I want to come back. I want to compete for the job. And then when he lost the job, he helped Tua. Like, you're not getting that from any other quarterback in this draft. You're not getting it from Burrow. Obviously, Tua, that's a moot point. You know, he was getting the help from Hurts. You're not getting it from Herbert. You're not getting it from Fromm. You're not getting it from anybody. This dude is legit. And he's going to, you know, he's going to demand the respect from his teammates. And he's going to demand it because he's earned it. And they're going to give it to him.
Yep. Yeah.
Those are all valid points, man. Those are all valid points. So before we get to closing this thing out, just a couple other names, and you guys feel free to chime in on either one of them. Jacob Eason's another name that we could have got into, and I know his name comes up. He's one I'm not super sold on. And then you're looking at Anthony Gordon. There's AJ Costello. Obviously, there's more names, but those are just some of the more, I would say, as of right now, the more popular names that are involved as far as who's going to be available in this quarterback class. So Mark, you know, before we officially close this thing out, man, you know, if there's anything you want to plug about yourself, you know, anything that you've been working on, any like charities you're affiliated with or whatever, I mean, floor is yours, man.
Oh, thanks guys. This has been a blast. Had a ton of fun. Hope to do it again sometime soon. If you guys would be nice enough to invite me back, what I'll plug, Doug Farrar and I over at Touchdown Wire, we're doing, you know, top 11 at each position for the draft. I've got top 11 interior offensive lineman coming out, I think, Saturday over at touchdownwire.usatoday.com. I've got interior defensive lineman coming out. I've got linebackers coming out. We're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff over there, so just check that out. But the easiest way to find me is on Twitter, at Mark Schofield.
I like it, man. And, you know, hey, thanks for coming on with us, too. You know, we're going to be kind of revisiting this series a little bit post-draft, so we'll definitely be reaching out to you.
Absolutely.
You know, just to talk about where some of these guys landed, and then, you know, obviously some of the other, you know, names that are available where they ended up landed, and just kind of cover all that stuff. So, you know, that's all we really have today, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Steve, I don't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead, George.
We're not going to let Mark get away with this. We never actually did go into what is Toto Forever.
Toto Forever? Well, look, there's a way to establish a brand on Twitter, okay? And for some, they do it by being perhaps abrasive, you know, jumping into fights, dunking on people when they can. I'm a bit more of a Twitter pacifist, I'd say. I try to avoid the fray. But I found that my love of an 80s synth pop band, Toto, which, by the way, is made up of fantastic, fantastic musicians. I mean, you think about some of the songs that you loved from when you were younger. Chances are Toto had a hand in it. One of their members had a hand in it. But I found that my love of Toto, and in particular, you know, the song Africa, was a way to endear me to people. And so it became my brand. And to the point where anything Toto related that gets tweeted on the timeline, hundreds of people at me with it immediately. Every Friday and Saturday night before we had to be like locked down in our homes, I would get hit with people doing karaoke, whether just at a bar or at a friend's house with a karaoke machine. I've had people sending it at their weddings and sending me video clips of it. And so it's been a nice way to sort of build a brand. And then I have expanded that with obviously the Scrubs gifts, automatic retweet on Twitter. And recently the Peaky Blinders gifts, again, automatic retweet on Twitter if I see them. But yeah, the Total Forever, it's just, you know, it's a nice little warm-hearted thing, I think, and people seem to dig it. So, yeah, Total Forever.
Cool. I like it. Yeah. You know, and George, I'm glad you cut me off, because now going back earlier, and I don't know if this is something you wanted to do on air or not, but you said you had something that you were going to throw at George.
Oh, Lord.
I do.
I was hoping you forgot.
And it's just, you cut me off, reminded me. I've dropped this on a couple of different shows with other AFC East friends. Rockpile Report, for example, my good friends Drew and Chris, they have a Bills podcast, and they actually had me on, and this is, again, these are good friends. They had me like sort of talk about Tom Brady and, you know, give like a 2-minute spiel on what, you know, Brady meant to the Patriots and things like that. And they warned me before on the show. They're like, look, we're going to have you do this, but we're going to do a thing. And so, you know, I'm going into my spiel and it's near the end, and I see Drew, the producer, pull out an iPad, and I get done and he hits play and they start playing Celebrate Good Times, and they literally popped champagne like on air, started like spraying the room, spraying each other, like just to dunk on me. It was fantastic. Like, I give him credit for that. So then I felt like I had to hit him with this, and this is what I'll hit George with now.
This is about to hurt.
Look, the plan is to roll with Stidham and see what they have. And I think they're all hoping that Jarrett Stidham works out and that they have their next quarterback. But if it doesn't, and they go, say, 5-11 or 4-12, and they have these 12 picks in this draft, but maybe they trade some of them for a future second here and there.
I know where this is going.
And Trevor Lawrence just happens to end up in New England. Then you guys brought that on yourselves, man. So what I'm saying is this. If you're a team in, say, November, December, and you're not going to make the playoffs and you're playing New England, just lay down.
So
just give New England a win, because you don't want to let Trevor or Justin Fields find their way to Foxborough. That's all I'm
saying. So I was watching you on the Podathon when this very subject did come up. And I made a little comment that Miami and the Jets will do everything they can to help New England win this division this year.
That's right. I remember that comment.
The problem is we got to get Buffalo on board, and I don't think Buffalo's having it.
No, Buffalo might not be having it. The thing that works against everybody, though, is the Patriots have a tough schedule. I mean, you know, the first place schedule to begin with, but they have – West Coast trips to, I think they play the Rams, the Chargers, and the Seahawks all out west. Or the 49ers, the Rams, and the Seahawks all out west. Something like that. I know they've got like 3 West Coast trips. It's not the easiest schedule. So
what I'm
just saying, guys.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to petition the NFL to cancel this season. And as bad as that it sounds, and as much as it would hurt a lot of people, I think they should cancel.
Such a Dolphins thing.
They should cancel this season. And the draft order will be how you finished last year. So, you know, the draft, you get the see what I'm saying here? You know, New England, again, there they are towards the end of the first round. And the NFL in general doesn't have to worry about another freaking 15 years of New England Patriots dominance.
That's okay. What's going to end up happening is somehow Jarrett Stidham is the guy. And I will just say this. Then in that case, look, the Twitter header photo I have is me and Jared Sinem down at Mobile at the Senior Bowl. When a friend, a buddy snapped that of me and him talking, I was like, oh, this is nice. That'll be an interesting thing to put up on Twitter someday. Now it's me and the Patriots starting quarterback. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
Yeah, it's honestly, you guys have a very good position in New England, because either Stidham's the guy and he's going to get you 7 to 9 wins, or he's not the guy and you're going to be in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. So you're in a good position either way.
It's going to be fun to cover. I'll say that.
I imagine it will be.
God, especially if Brian Hoyer does come in, because I think the last time he was a Patriot quarterback, is that when he blew out his knee?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so, I mean, that could happen again, too. You never know.
I mean, look, Bill, I got 2 throws left in this arm, buddy.
he's got 2 throws left in that arm, and he's willing to block like nobody's business.
I am willing to block, too. Look, we'll run a flex bone option offense. We can put Dan Vitale at the B-back. We can have Damian Harris and Sony Michelle at the A-back spots. We'll just run a little flex bone. It'll be like that book Paper Lion, too. Well, I'll write about it at the end before I, you know, die on the field. But it'd be fun for everybody.
Just one play, right? That's all you want, one play.
One play. Just give me one play so I can die with honor.
You don't have to. You don't even have to pay him, Bill. He'll do it for free.
Yep, I'll do it. I'll do it for the laughs on Twitter. I'll do it for the timeline. It will be a joyous event to bring everybody together. I mean, what would be more uniting than to see me die on the first play of the 2020 NFL season? I think everybody would just get by. I'd take one for the universe.
Oh God. Yeah, but then it would be like it would be like that scene at the end of Jerry Maguire where you're like Rod Tidwell. It's like you're dead on the field, but then you pop up and just start dancing everywhere, right?
I can't dance. We know that.
But anyways, yeah, so we'll close this thing out here definitely this time around. So that's all today. Mark, thanks again for joining us, man. And as he said, you can find him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. You have the Sleeper Wire Show at Sleeper Wire Show. You can find Rob Rose at EastSorbor1, George at BFTG Pod, and myself at SBAC21. You know, be sure to look up Sleeper Wire Show on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever you enjoy listening to your podcast, because we have more and more content that's continuing out through the off season. So until the next time you hear our voices, y'all be easy. Have a good one.